For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good morning, everyone. For new people, I'm Taigen Layton, the teacher here, and I'm delighted to have with us this morning as a guest teacher, Kazuaki Tanahashi. Kaz is an old friend, an artist, actually three of his paintings, one temporarily is are adorning our Zendo now, painter and calligrapher who's exhibited worldwide. Kaz is also an environmentalist and peace activist, and spoke about his revised yesterday at DePaul University. Spoke about his revised Four Noble Truths for facing our current crises. So there's some copies of those out in the entryway on the amongst the flyers. But today, Kaz is going to be speaking about Eihei Dogen, the 13th century master who brought the what we now call the Soto lineage teaching from China to Japan. Dogen is a great master of Zen literature, and Kaz is one of the great translators of Dogen. He's translated now the complete Shobo Genzo, True Dharma, High Treasury, one of, Dogen's masterwork. I had the honor of translating a few of those essays with Kaz. And for those of you in the practice commitment period we're doing now, studying Hongzhi, I finished that translation almost 30 years ago when I was living with Kaz and his family, and he told me then, oh, you'll do many more books. And I said, no, this is enough. But anyway, he knew better than me. So, Kaz, I'm really happy that you're here and speaking about Dogen this morning. There's a handout. I hope all of you have that.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Very nice to see you and join your practice. Thank you for your kind introduction, Taigen Roshi, and thank you for inviting me, Sangha of Ancient Zen Gate. And it's my honor to talk to you about Zen Master Dogen and his work. I think maybe many of you feel that for kind of study and practice of meditation, perhaps Dogen is most clearest and most extensive elucidator of meditation practice, and also life centering on meditation. So not only in Buddhism but in different spiritual traditions, Dogen can be his great resource for understanding meditation. I like to sort of summarize his life. He was born in the year 1200, so in a way it's easy that to figure out how old he was. It's easy actually to think of Western Japanese, always we have to add one extra year. because one is born, one is 1 year, 1 year old at birth, and then gains another year next New Year's Day, and if someone is born on New Year's Eve, the next day she or he will be 2 years old. Fast track. He was ordained when he was 13 in the Western way, and then he became a Zen student when he was 17. And then he and his teacher, Myozen, went to China when Dogen was 23, and met his teacher Rujin at Tiantong Monastery when he was 25, and completed his practice and went back to Japan, and then entered Kenin Monastery in Kyoto. So he was like a guest, maybe Zen practitioner at that time. And then he was kind of wandering around for 7 years, but during that time he wrote Fukan Zazengi, recommending Zazen to all people, in a way that was the his declaration of maybe starting a new practice of Zen. In a way, Zen meditation has been always kind of done in Buddhism, but always maybe a part of kind of Buddhist practice. But to make it sort of completely and in a way you can say single practice of meditation, that was not allowed in Japan actually, because there was some established Buddhism at that time, Tendai school and then Shingon school. Tendai did the more comprehensive practice of Mahayana precepts, Lotus Sutra study, and Vajrayana practice, and then Zen meditation. And then the other main school of Buddhism at that time was Shingon school, true word, mantra school. Solely practicing Vajrayana Buddhism. So Tendai establishment did not like the idea of single practice, like Pure Land practice, single practice of chanting Amitabha Buddha's name, and then they really kind of oppressed the leaders of that practice, although it was so popular. And then that time, Kamakura period, where the government, kind of Shogun's government, warrior's government, was in Kamakura, close to Mount Fuji, not so far from the present-day Tokyo. Kyoto was the kind of capital city. The emperor was there. So administration was in Kamakura. That time, sort of people got tired of this comprehensive practice and the esoteric practice, because In a way, it was like elite Buddhism. You have to learn very complex rituals. And that was the center of the practice, and then prayers for healings and prosperity, you know, protecting the nation. So single practice of especially Pure Land Buddhism became more and more popular. Esai brought Zen Buddhism first, and then built Kenji Monastery in Kyoto, along with other monasteries. But he was not allowed to, you know, teach Zen alone. So he had to combine Vajrayana practice and Zen. And then Dogen met Esai, but Esai was so old, so he studied Esai's Dharma successor, Myozen. But both Myozen and Dogen felt that maybe their understanding of Zen was not enough. So they both went to China. It was not easy to get permission from the Kamakura administration and then the imperial court, but anyway, they got the permission and then went to China. So he went back to Japan when he was 27, and then it took 7 years to get settled, and then started a small monastery called Kosho Hori Monastery in south of Kyoto, a place called Uji. So he was 33 years old. And then maybe 10 years later, he presented this, you might say, Dharma discourse, but also it was an essay. So it was written first and presented to Lord Hatanos, and then maybe people who were invited in his residence in Kyoto. So that was 1242. So Dogen was 42 years old. And Hatano was maybe the head of the Kyoto office of Shogun's government. So he was like a governor and in a very powerful position. And he had his own regions in Fukui, present-day Fukui prefecture, Echizen province, on Japan Sea, not too far from Kyoto. So in a way, it was a very important occasion that Dogen was invited by this powerful warrior. And then so Dogen wrote this short essay and then presented it at his residence on the 12th month of 12.2. In a way, this was maybe Dogen knew, perhaps, but Atano was very interested in him, and then he could become maybe potentially a great supporter of Dogen's community. And it was interesting, you know, I mean, if you are kind of talking to general military officers, and then how do you kind of present it? You could, if you're a Buddhist, you could talk about nonviolence. Or you could encourage people to use the power of meditation to for fighting or something like that, which was done by Zen masters much later. But Dogen kind of presented this classical in a very interesting way, I think. We'll talk about it, but I'm sure this really impressed Lord Hatano, and then he again invited Dogen to come over, and I think that time already he expressed his wish to invite Dogen to his province. And this is my guess, but Kyoto was not really an easy place to start a new kind of Buddhist teachings because of the real pressure from the Tendai school based on Mount Hiei, very close to the Kyoto. Mount Hiei was the maybe greatest Buddhist university of that time. So there were many temples and many hermitages, and many people are kind of studying Buddhism. It's not like a university as we know in the Western world. It's more kind of practitioners' places, but also intense kind of academic studies. And then next year, 1243, I think, Dogen, as in other years earlier, he started a practice period. That is ango in Japanese, meaning peaceful abiding. That's 3 months intense meditation period after, you know, Shakyamuni Buddha's kind of retreat during the monsoon time. So in India, people were doing some mendicant kind of practice, begging practice. Monks and nuns were not allowed to do any kind of trade or do any kind of work like farming. Kind of their practices. Go to people's doors and then kind of ask for donation of some food, some money. But during the monsoon time, they couldn't do that, so they stayed together and practiced. So that's the kind of meaning of the practice period, and it's very important because monks and nuns gained Dharma age by doing so. So they become 1 year kind of older. So seniority, which is very important in Buddhist practice, determined by the number of practice period they completed. So in Japan, as in China, practice period started on the full moon day, the 15th day of the lunar calendar of the fourth month, and end with on the full moon day, 15th of the seventh month. So that's a kind of a summertime in lunar calendar. So it's of course important. People are not allowed to enter the monastery or leave the monastery. You know, that's an intense time to practice together. But very unusual happened in that year, 1243. Dogen was not in his monastery for some time. Dogen was a very meticulous recorder of his writings, always dated. He dated, sometimes put the hour. I don't think, you know, any kind of any people like in Europe or anybody, any kind of monastic leaders or writers who recorded kind of everything related, everything they wrote. You know. So, but Dogen's time, in Dogen's case, he was very meticulous. So we know most of his writings and then Dharma discourses when he did that, what he was thinking on what day. So he recorded, I'm sorry I didn't write it down, but you could find it here. We have a very comprehensive chronology of Dogen's life here, based on his recording, writings. So this day, soon after the practice period started on the 15th day of the fourth month, already on the 29th day, he was in Kyoto, and then he presented, at least he wrote the fascicle, the discourse, Old Buddha Mind. And then on the fifth day of the fifth month, he wrote Bodhisattva's Four Methods of Guidance, a great teaching. It's about maybe lay practice in a way, you know, bodhisattva practice. Of course, bodhisattva includes home leavers and lay person, but and he signed Monk Dogen, who transmitted Dharma from China. So we don't have a record of his presentation, but we can really assume that this was presented to Lord Hatano and his maybe people in his monastery. He doesn't have to say he transmitted Dharma from China. So it's a kind of formal presentation to him, and what maybe he could, Lord Hatano could do as a lay practitioner. And then I assume that at the end of the practice period, on the 15th day of the 7th month, he was back to Kosho Hori Monastery, his own monastery. And then we don't know which day, but the his Sangha moved to Echizen province. Maybe it takes 3 days to walk there. But so you can really see that during this practice period, Dogen was in Kyoto, and maybe he was making a maybe detailed arrangement about construction of the monastery, and maybe support of the practicing community. And so all these details probably was being discussed and maybe being committed during this time. So as soon as the practice kind of period ended, most of the community moved to north, to the Japan Sea area. And then soon, already, over there, he next kind of the first, so this was after the 15th day, the move took place, and then on the first day of the next month, he was already kind of dating some of his writings. So that was the kind of monastery construction period, 1243 to 45, somewhat 2 hours plus time, the monastery called Daibutsu Monastery, Great Buddha Monastery, was being constructed. And that time he was so productive. He wrote a number of essays, maybe also these were delivered to sometimes his practicing community, but also sometimes to lay people, maybe people who are doing construction. So sometimes maybe one or two occasions on the same day he kind of gave 2 Dharma discourses. And then I think this Daibutsu Monastery lasted only 2 years. This is my guess, but usually the abbot signs, you know, kind of the temple name. So maybe you would sign Ancient Dragon Taiden or something like that. And so he would sign Daibutsu Dogen, you know, Great Buddha Dogen. So it's you can see it's awkward, you know, calling himself Great Buddha. So he changed the monastery name to Eihei, which is taken from the era in China, the very early time in the Christian calendar, in era. So that's kind of Japanese Sundays. Eihei, meaning eternal peace. So Zenki, I think it means Zen, means total or entire. And Ki means activity or function or person. Ki is a very interesting word. I think also it means opportunity. And then someone said that it means opportunity and the crisis. And I think, and then it's a kind of interesting concept and in a way useful teaching that crisis also means opportunity. But it's not really true. You have to say opportunity, you have to say good key. And then crisis is like a dangerous key and so forth. So key is a more like a neutral word, meaning, again, activity, function, maybe chance, also person. Mm-hmm. Has a lot of potential. It means potential, too. So key is a very complex word in Japanese. It's different from key of breath or energy. And Zen means total. So I think Abe and Waddell translated it as like a total dynamic function or something like that. But Edward Brown and then we translate together. And we call it undivided activity. So in a way, it's kind of Zen total. You could say entire activity, but in a way, undivided, we like it better because it shows that something is divided, like maybe one or I, a practitioner, and then the world are not the same, are divided. But we could see it not divided. So in a way, there's some kind of dynamism when we say undivided. And I'd like to talk about maybe last paragraph of this handout. And the birth is just like riding in a boat. So birth is maybe in Buddhism, and I think in Indian, maybe paradigm, kind of birth and death. Life is kind of birth and death. You know, how kind of we are reborn to be in a good place is really important. This kind of entire Indian kind of paradigm is kind of samsara, and then transmigration. So we are born and die, and then we are born and die. So this is the kind of, this is the view of life. So birth is important, and the life is in a way to get a good birth in the next life. So but we can kind of understand it as life. You know, we can just replace it. Birth is just like riding in a boat. You raise the sail and you steer. Although you maneuver the sail and the pole, the boat gives you a ride, and without the boat, you couldn't ride. But you ride in the boat, and your riding makes the boat what it is. Investigate a moment such as this. That's just such a moment. There is nothing but the world of the boat. The sky, the water, and the shore are all the boat's world, which is not the same as the world that is not the boat's. Thus, you make birth what it is. You make birth your birth. When you ride in a boat, your body, mind, and environment together are the undivided activity of the boat. The entire earth and the entire sky are both the undivided activity of the boat. Thus, earth is nothing but you. You are nothing but earth. When I was a young artist, I was looking for some kind of spiritual guidance, and then as in many other people, I went to existentialism. And then, you know, it was kind of that time, it was very popular. And then I realized maybe to be a good artist in the existentialism, you need to be in despair, and or you need to be bored. And I thought it didn't work with me. And then I was looking around, and then I found this passage by Dogen, and then I thought, oh, this is just amazing. I don't understand what he was saying, but maybe I could kind of study more and try to understand it. I knew, kind of, right away, maybe he could be my teacher. I guess I should maybe ask people to have some questions or something. Yeah? Yeah?
Do you want to say something more about this passage, though?
I think, you know, one kind of Buddhist idea of the world is kind of floating world. So maybe we're kind of floating in maybe a river or something. And then, you know, we can't do so much, you know, about the stream of the water. We're just kind of, we can't do so much. We are like helpless. And then we live and die. So that was a very common Buddhist view. But Dogen is completely different, you know. You can live each moment fully, and then you make your life life. And then you are not separate from the entire world. You have the entire world kind of let you live. But also you live, and then you make the entire world live. So you have power, and you have responsibility. And this is an amazing concept. And in a way, I think we need to have affirmation that we have, you know, capacity to live each moment fully, and this kind of depth. And then we can be responsible for our action each moment, and then that can affect the world. So that's I think that teaching is still relevant, and maybe more relevant than any other time in history. So, yeah. Thank you.
So, we have power to make the world right now.
You know, I think this could be very elusive too, you know. I'm kind of almighty and so forth. Maybe we can think more deeply. It's not that. Maybe we can be one with the world only when we practice, you know, in meditation. The significance, well, the difference between the kind of large, you know, kind of wild world, small self, like short-lived small self, and then the difference between life and death, momentary and timeless. Becomes obscure and insignificant in meditation, in the deepest part of our consciousness. You know, it's already all there, but by the practice of meditation, we can realize that. We maybe notice. We can notice that. So that maybe the non-separation, that's kind of Dogen's basic teaching, non-separation of practice and enlightenment, and also enlightenment and practice, which is important, and non-separation of time and existence, and time and self. Large self and universal self, non-separation, and non-separation of non-action in a way. Meditation is non-action, nothing happens, but also action. Also non-separation of action and non-action.
Sounds like the non-separation you're talking about has many implications for us now. So, comments, questions, responses for Cox, please feel free to talk.
For your what you said about the last few lines, I think it really clarified something that I've been experiencing during this practice period. I was sort of actually dropping off my ideas about like what the practice of Zen looks like. Because when I came to Zen, I thought, you know, if you feel like speaking 10 times, be silent 9, and all these other sort of different sayings. But realizing that, you know, not like the delusive way you said of like thinking with this omnipotent person who goes forward and determines the fate of the world, but realizing that because we aren't separate, that there are opportunities where we have a responsibility and a choice to maybe turn over that stone, which has an implication that, you know, impacts the entire world. I think lately I've had more opportunities where 5 or 6 months ago I would have thought, well, maybe I should just not say anything and it'll resolve itself. But then I started to think, well, maybe the way that sometimes people act, they don't see it, and if you don't bring it up, then they'll continue to inflict that behavior on other people. And so by, you know, through clear looking and seeing, okay, responding rather than reacting, if we each show each other how we are, then we can change, well, the entire world. But
Yeah, I think speaking out is important. But also not speaking is important too sometimes. We need to see what is most appropriate or most effective way. Sometimes not speaking is more effective.
Thank you for the synopsis of the teaching. So I guess maybe let us what I felt and so you know what I'm clear separates me from feeling the oneness, feeling connected, is the story that I have in my head of the thinking. And so I'm just wondering if you can comment about can oneness, like how do we merge oneness with the story? If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Or is that possible? Or
maybe intellectual kind of idea about oneness, or more like a deeper feeling, or maybe more like a life's kind of actions, in a way. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, like Heart Sutra probably largely kind of encourage people to experience the freedom from distinctions, you know. Distinctions are important too. Boundaries. We are all kind of diverse, different, and then our lives are all different, and then our positions and then relationship and all that. Everything has boundary, and then so keeping boundary is common wisdom, and then being one, sort of free from boundary, is wisdom beyond wisdom, and they are both important. And if you think kind of wisdom beyond wisdom is more important, and then kind of there is a tendency to break the boundaries, which creates mess. So these are both important, and in a way, how we can live. How do we live without sort of making missteps? But in a way, you know, it's not, I'm talking about this in the book of Heart Sutra, it's not that there is a duality between non-duality and duality, but, you know, well, it seems like that, you know, common wisdom and wisdom beyond wisdom, kind of almost like an opposite. But if we kind of... like a dance, you know, one step and so. And then if we get used to dance, kind of, we can dance gracefully. And in a way, it's not an opposition. It's just a kind of normal way of living.
Passage about the Buddha is actually, I mean, it's very, very much like in the Heart Sutra. You know, this
mm-hmm.
non-duality between, same as indifference or whatever, with this idea, we have this idea that we have, the self that we tend to consolidate into here, and then there's everything else, floors, other people, bolts. But what Dogen seems to be saying is that, this image of some sort of being separate at any given moment from the entirety of the, environment, it's just, it's just a kind of confused way of seeing it, and that that actually what we think of as ourselves is actually sort of a function of everything else, and then we, by living that out, we, as he says, there's not a boat until you're riding the boat, and so it's this very kind of, as you say, a dance. I mean, it's a very graceful, kind of elegant way of the entire situation kind of coming to life in a sort of way. And we have a responsibility in that, as you say.
Thank you. I agree with you. I think Heart Sutra sort of appears to be completely negative. Everything is sort of not. I try to make it more positive in my translation with Roshi John Halifax, but also in the book, Free From, and then, instead of no I, no he, no ears. So in a way, I think the Heart Sutra and Dogen teaching maybe you can maybe say almost like two sides of the same sheet of paper.
Yes, sir.
Could you comment on the role of Sangha and our responsibility to each other as we continuously realize this practice?
I think that Sangha is really crucial because I think maybe practice is by definition kind of practice with all awakened ones throughout space and time. So even when you sit by yourself at home, you are practicing with all awakened ones and all bodhisattvas. And so we often chant, right, in all ceremonies and services. To remind that we are not alone.
I wanted to just comment on, I appreciated your description of Dogen's efforts coming back, as a young monk, and then coming back from China to Japan, partly in the context of, how we are trying to bring Zen, whatever this is, to Chicago and to America. And so this transition that Dogen was experiencing and the way, the particulars of how he tried to do this, it is kind of relevant for us. So I just, appreciated that. Just wanted to say that.
Thank you.
So maybe one more comment and we should wrap it up. So, Keizan.
Well, this relates maybe a little bit to Taigen's comment. It's a question. What is it like, or what are your observations about having seen this practice in its nascent early stage, a few beatniks sitting with Suzuki Roshi, to now Dogen Zen is in many places here. I don't know. Is there anything you could say about witnessing this?
Well, in 1964, when I first met Overtaken, and also Reverend Shinryu Suzuki at the time. In Soto School, Bishop Kumagata of Hawaii Soto Mission, and then I think Bishop Yamada in Los Angeles, and then Shinryu Suzuki were the all stars of Soto Zen at the time. And now we have, I don't know how many members of this kind of certified teachers in the Soto American Zen Soto Association, like over 100, right?
Yeah. 50, I don't even know.
Yeah. So it's just amazing, you know. It's gratifying, and then there's different kind of styles of teaching, you know, in many ways, and then a lot of engaged Buddhist activities, and also kind of academic studies, you know. And I said to people in Japan, you know, if you like to study Dogen, you should go to the USA. And that's true. And because, you know, if you read Dogen in Japanese, you feel you kind of, you get it. But, you know, it's sort of, it's written in Japanese. You maybe understand each word. And but actually, you know, it's not. You know, Dogen is much more than you can kind of look at the surface of text. And I think, in a way, through translation and then through kind of real, kind of more like scientific or Western European style kind of academic studies, and then investigating in different ways, comparing with different other teachings of Buddhism, different schools, and then only then I think we can really, could really appreciate Dogen's teaching. So I'm so grateful to your studies and your practice.
Thank you very much, Pastor. We'll close the formal part of this.